Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Hey everyone, before we get into today's episode, I just want to let you know that our friends at Outdoor Edge have partnered with some great brands to help bring your fall full circle with their Field to Freezer to Fire giveaway. Here's how you enter. Go to their Facebook page and sign up to win some awesome prizes and packages from brands including Yeti, Weston, Bradley Smokers, and more. These are some awesome products that will help you process your game, keep your game in the freezer, and eventually cook it for your table. You have until January 15th to sign up, so take advantage of that. Outdoor Edge in the Field to Freezer to Fire giveaway. Go to their Facebook page and make it happen. And if you decide to purchase any products from the website, enter the discount code NATION30. That's the word NATION with the number 30 after that, no spaces, NATION30, and you will receive 30% off your purchase. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. Hopefully you guys are enjoying your life. I'm enjoying mine. Today, we have a guy on the podcast who is known for killing deer in hard to reach places. He's one of the, I would say, one of the most well-known mobile hunters, Mr. Dan Infault. Today he is the hunting beast, and we're not talking strategy, we're not talking tactics, we are going to talk hunting gear and equipment. Now if you don't know, Dan has a company called Hunting Beast Gear, and today we're going to talk about the climbing sticks that he's developed. We're going to talk about the hang-on tree stand that he developed. We're going to talk about the ins and outs, how his background as someone who works in a research and development department for a company that does a lot of machining. He is a problem solver, is what he said, and how this has all, his experience in the timber, his experience in his job, led him to creating the sticks and the tree stands. So it's a pretty interesting episode. Be sure you are subscribing to the Hunting Gear Podcast, because we're going to be having a lot more really that sentence sounded horrible, but we're gonna in the future we're gonna have a lot more really good content coming down this pipe, and hopefully you guys enjoy it, because now that the seasons are starting to wind down, my mind starts to shift back to gear for a little bit, and I'm really thinking and evaluating all of the gear that I use throughout the entire season, whether it's for Western trips or whether it's for my whitetail hunting, my typical tree stand hunting. I'm reevaluating everything, seeing if there's places where I can be more efficient, seeing if there's any dead weight I can cut, or seeing if there's any new products that I want to pick up. So all those conversations are going to be had here on the Hunting Gear Podcast. We're going to be bringing in a lot of experts, in whatever category, whether it's bows, arrows, broadheads. We're going to be talking to average Joes, see how they pick their equipment, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. So hopefully you guys enjoy this podcast. Here is Dan Infault with Hunting Beast Gear. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Dan Infault. Dan, how we doing, man?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Can't complain. For the most part, I think my season's over. How about you?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Pretty much done for the year.
Yep. How'd your season go?
I got a 10-pointer in Wisconsin during the rut. Did some traveling, had some close calls, but that's it, just a 10-pointer.
Nice, nice. Did you get that in November or different month?
November.
November. Let's see. Yeah. So for a lot of us, the first week in November was fairly warm. Did you experience that, or did you hunt during cooler temps, or what part of November was the best for you this year?
Oh, I think I shot it right like the first day of November.
Oh, okay.
Either that or it was Halloween or something right in that that time frame.
Gotcha. So he was fairly early before the real craziness of the rut hit.
Correct. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Cool, man. Well, that's good. Congrats on that buck. But this is the Hunting Gear Podcast, and today you are on here to talk about beast gear, and I'm excited to have you on today to talk about this product line, because it's something that came from you, right? So a lot of the times, some of the guests that we have on and the products that we're talking about don't necessarily come from those people, whether the person who created the product was gone, or they sold the company and it's since transitioned power to somebody else. You know how it goes. But I'm excited to talk directly to you about this. And so just to kick things off, right now, the beast gear has the tree stand and the climbing sticks, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So basically what I want to do is talk to you about the timeline. Okay. How long ago, because it says here on your website, it says 4 years of prototype testing and engineering. How long ago was it when you decided, hey man, it's time for me to bring tree stand and climbing sticks to the market?
That's a good question. This project has been in the back of my mind for about 10 or 15 years. But I really never planned on bringing it to market to a certain point.
Yeah.
About 6 or 7 years ago, probably seven, I just decided I was going to make my own stuff. And didn't care what it cost or whatever. I was just going to build my own equipment and build what I wanted to use the way I wanted to use it. I was at a point where I felt like nobody in the industry was addressing mobile hunting. And the majority of us are mobile hunters. The majority of us live on public land. The majority of us go on a trip once a year to a different state and need to be able to set up quick and hunt and be mobile. But the industry was addressing people who would put 40 stands on their property, rotate through the stands based on the wind, and that's a whole different type of hunting. So there's really nothing for us, and what we were doing was using equipment built for something else to mobile hunt.
Yeah.
And some of the equipment was pretty good, like Lone Wolf portable tree stands that Weaver has. Those stands are really good. I like them, but there's some flaws in them for a mobile guy. But it was usable and doable. But I thought I could do something better for myself and didn't really take in any kind of concept of making something for somebody else. And I work in an industry where I develop new products for engineering groups, mechanical projects, metal products, the same kind of stuff like tree stands, only for a whole different industry, and work with development teams to build this stuff. So I kind of have an expert background in that stuff. And I think a lot of tree stand manufacturers that come out, these new people, don't. They're hunters that have an idea they want to build. And because of that, it doesn't come out quite right, I think.
Gotcha.
So I kind of just wanted to play with my own idea there and develop something for myself. And I had the concept of machining or water jetting a stand out of a solid billet of extruded aluminum. Now, there were several companies that had made a stand out of a solid piece, but it wasn't really for production or for sale or for use. It was made out of jig plate as a prototype to test a theory, mostly in like casting. So they would first make it out of metal and then go cast it, but they never came up with the concept of extruded metal. And the thing with extruded metal is that it has a grain to it, so it's not fragile like casting. So I can make it much thinner, and it'll flex and bend back where it won't snap. So you can make a lighter weight stand. So that's where I came up with the concept for the stand. But the first thing I made was the sticks. And there's a lot more into something like that than what a person really realizes.
Yeah. So you, I know this because I've talked to you before, but your background is a, like a CNC machinist, correct?
Well, actually, I do R&D machining, so I use all kinds of equipment.
Okay.
So I run a department.
Okay.
Now, it's been downsized like crazy because of the industry's backing off, but I run a department that works with engineering teams to develop products. Now, it's in the printing industry. So I'm basically making machines for printing to make magazines and stuff like that, which is kind of boring, but it's still, you get to make, you know, exciting projects and work on things. And that's all I do is, like, when you're in high school and you work in shop class and you build some project, that's kind of what I do, is I build new products like that. And then I work with engineering teams to make them more machinable, develop them different, you know, more economical, things like that. And I've been doing that for my whole life.
Right. And so the cool thing about what you do and this, you know, the transferring that knowledge over into Beast Gear, it sounds like you have a background not only in machining, but in problem solving for products.
Right. And so I'll have engineering come to me and they'll say, we've got this product here and we have this problem with it. We can't figure out what it is, and we'll have, you know, the best guys get together and we'll have group thought about how to fix this issue and what we can mechanically build or alter to make something work better. So it's an ongoing process of fixing things. And because of that, I mean, when a guy like me walks through a deer show and looks at products, I look at them and I'm like, well, that's going to fail right there. It's going to fail right there. And it's funny because I can watch it later on, have recalls for what, you know, what you saw was going to fail. So it's kind of weird because to me, it looks like everybody should see that, but it's just that I looked at it for, you know, that kind of stuff for 20 years. So I see it different.
Yeah. Or at the same time, you know, and I'm somewhat like you where I'll walk through the show and I may not see the failure points on a specific product, but I see its limitations. And, you know, the one
right.
thing.
And yeah. You know where that is because you're an expert too. You're an expert in how you hunt and what you need.
Yeah.
And this guy's trying to develop something for you. And you're like, well, that's not exactly what I need.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing that sticks out to me is the crooked tree, right? So not yep. being able to level a tree stand. I mean, I don't even know what percentage. I'm going to say high. Over 75 of the tree stands, if not closer to 80 or 85% of the tree stands on the market, you have to have a straight tree to use them.
Correct.
So that's one thing just out of the blue that pisses me off. So,
and at the same time, you know, a mobile hunter, once you start to get, now not the new guys that are kind of bumbling around, but once you start to get successful, you start to realize big bucks live on edge.
Yeah.
Try finding straight, uncrooked trees on edge.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. So the first product that you wanted to bring to the market was the sticks. What did that process look like for you? I mean, did you always have an idea that, you know, you wanted a double step and that you wanted it to be a certain height and all this stuff? Walk us through the process of the evolution of that stick from prototype to market.
The evolution of that stick was, I was using a stick that's currently on the market where the bracket that connects to the tree rotates. Mm-hmm. The steps rotate from one side to the other. And they kept loosening up. I wanted something that didn't loosen up. They kept squeaking and making noises. They, when they'd loosen, it would cause issues where it would bend the bolt a little bit, open up the holes, things like that, and it would get worse and worse, and then you'd have to keep repairing the thing. You'd have to keep tightening bolts and nuts and stuff. And then I felt like the step distance on it, from step to step, was so short, it was ridiculous. So I felt like I wanted to correct the problems with it. So I took the stick that I had and I thought, I want a rigid stick. I don't want anything on there moving. Moving parts make noise. They loosen, they break, they need repair. They need to be maintained. I want something rigid. So I looked at something being solid, where you put it together solid and it stays together solid. And I want it to be a real tight fit. So the first thing was to have, you know, a solid step. And I wanted it on both sides because half the time I'm hanging from a tree setting a stand on the old stick with one foot, and I'm hanging on the tree with one arm, and I'm trying to put the stand on with the other arm, and while I'm hanging on with the other arm, I'm trying to get a strap on where I felt like, man, why wouldn't you want two steps on this? Well, the reason was they were building it for people that put it up once. You only have to deal with that once. I do it every day, every morning, every evening. I take it up, take it down. So I wanted that double step, and I wanted it wide enough, you know, to take a big winter boot. And I wanted it at the top where I could stand across the whole top of the stick. And then I felt like the angle on the stick that I had was not great enough. So if I got onto an angled tree, number one, the stick would rotate around the tree with the other brand. As soon as you had an angled tree, if you put it on the angle, which sometimes you need to, if you're, you know, you want to sneak up the backside of a tree or something. But their angle was like 4 or 5 degrees. I think it was actually 4 degrees angle on it. And what would happen is a step would wear and eventually be vertical. And any kind of angle at all, your foot's slipping off of it. So I made an aggressive 10-degree angle on it, on ours. And then I made a fit to fit into the tube, and I kept that really high tolerance, you know, within thousands. So it was almost a press fit. You know, you just kind of snap it on there and bolt it together, and there's nothing to move. Because if you get any kind of wobble in there, it's going to just increase, and it's going to create noise. It's going to create creaks and all that stuff. So that pretty much developed the step, and I want to integrate that into the antler bracket on the backside that connects to the tree. So that was kind of a fun project because I was able to use the computer models and stuff and take all the different diameters of trees that I figured I'd be hunting out of and make it so that find the points that work best for all the different tree diameters. And then I took computer models and made it into like an antler rack to look like an antler rack.
Yeah.
With the points being in the positions I needed. So then I put them at a sharp angle. And then the first models I made were really sharp, and I wanted them sharp for myself. But they were pretty sharp, and people got cut a little bit at first. So we've dulled that up because really the first models were made for me, like I said. But still, it's sharp enough that it cuts into a tree a little bit, slides down, locks in, And even when you unstrap, most of the time you got to pull it out of the tree. But we made it so it would grab onto the tree. So you can literally put it on a tree, you know, on a severe angle, and it won't rotate around the tree. It won't kick out. It won't do any of that.
Okay.
So we use computer models too to figure out the exact position of the, like the button, where you want the force from the strap, to make sure it was pushing the bottom antler bracket into the tree. Because a common problem with the other sticks was it to kick out. As a matter of fact, I couldn't find any sticks that didn't kick out. I mean, they got a little better if they're longer, but it was hard to find a short stick that did not kick out on the bottom. So by getting the model right on the antler bracket, and that took some work. It took a lot of prototyping, a lot of effort, a lot of field testing. But eventually we got it to the point where when you put that thing on a tree, it just locks in.
Yeah.
Period. And then, you know, the worst part about it is when you sell these things, I mean, people look at it like it's just a stick.
Yeah.
But if you can get it in a guy's hands, once they try it, they'll never go back. I mean, if they've used the other brands, they're like, holy crap. You know what I mean? So the more I sell, the more I sell. You see a snowballing effect. But like I said, I wasn't planning on selling. And the first ones were solid tubes, and then I started thinking about weight reduction holes and how that would add a 3D effect to see through them, and add an aggressive chamfer so that you could grip it and it would give little shadows. And then we used computer models to take as much material out as possible in the right areas without the stick bending.
Yeah. I want you to explain that, because, you know, the stick looks cool, but – you know, someone, you know, let's just say someone who doesn't know any better looks at that and goes, man, that just doesn't look as stable as some of the other sticks on the market just because of all the holes drilled through it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny you say that, because you see other stand companies and stuff trying to mimic that, and they're using odd-shaped holes and stuff. Well, round holes are strong. They're really strong because they got a complete – radius, it's hard to explain, it's like an engineering thing, but round holes are much stronger than any other shape. So that's why we use round. And then what we could do is we put them in a stand, we put in a computer model, and we can shift these holes around in different positions. And we can, in the models, we can add force to the stick where the force would be. And the computer models will tell us at what weight they'll give out at. If you put a weight like on the step, when will it give out? And they're pretty accurate. Now, they make some mistakes, because when you get in the field, there's a little bit of difference in a tree, you know, than the perfect world of a computer.
Yeah.
You know, how it's where it's exactly having pressure on the tree because of the shape of the tree and stuff like that. So it's still got to be field tested, but it gets you right in the ballpark real close.
Yeah.
And then we took it to the point where it would bend, and then just backed it off just a little bit and shifted the holes around to the perfect positions. And you'll notice that there's some areas that we don't have holes in. And that's because if you put them there, it's going to bend.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's where the force areas are.
So let's talk about the material you used, you know, for all the components of the stands and then, the sticks, and why that's important as well.
Yeah, we used extruded 6061 aluminum. I extrude every single piece of that or metal piece of that stand. I mean, a stick. So the tube is even extruded, because tubing varies in size up to plus or minus a 16th, believe it or not. So if I just bought tubing, the size would vary greatly, and it would you wouldn't get that tight fit. So in order to keep that tight fit from the antler bracket to the stick, both pieces are extruded so that they fit together real tight, which is an expensive process. It's expensive to extrude them, and it's a lot more expensive than buying a piece of tubing.
Okay. All right. So then, you know, there's the people out there who are nuts when it comes to weight. Okay. And I see that, you know, the stick here with the fastening strap is 2.2 pounds. Where does that compare to the other climbing sticks on the market at that size?
You know, I haven't really looked around that close. I just worried about getting mine as low as possible.
Yeah.
I know there's some new ones coming out that are pretty light. I think some of the choices in engineering and materials are interesting, but that has yet to be seen. But we just worried about getting ours as light as possible and being as efficient as possible.
Gotcha. All right. So then, and then as far as the sticks are concerned, do they come in one size or multiple sizes?
Right now we have two sizes. We've got the 24 inch and 20 incher, and the 20 inch has the 18 inch step. And I actually, when I first built them, I wanted to have the longest strides you could have where it would be useful for everybody. And we came up with the longer stick. That was the first one we built. And we tried it with people that were real short. We tried it with older people. And it was something where the average guy would look at that length and say, well, I don't want that. That's too far. But what they don't realize is you're not standing next to something, not holding on something, lifting your foot like on a ladder or something. You're actually, when you grab onto the tree, you can lift your foot a lot higher. So that step distance worked real well, and it worked with over 95% of our customers, but you had to convince them that they could lift their foot that far. Once they try it, they'd like it.
Yeah.
But so that was my thing, was to get it as long as possible. So we get, you know, high up the tree as possible. But what I found out is when we made the short sticks, and I made them more out of people really wanting the short sticks. So when I made them, I kind of made them with a, like, I don't know, you know, but when I used them, I was really impressed. I can get almost the same height as the longer ones. I mean, you're only talking a 4-inch difference per stick. So in two sticks, you're only talking 8 inches or yeah. 16 and four. So really you're getting the same height, you know, and, it ain't much difference. You could stretch them just a little further and still get the same height.
Yeah.
But, so I really like the shorter ones. I like the way they pack on the stand. So, but yeah, the other thing, you were talking about material before. You know, we used a 6061 extruded aluminum. A lot of guys are wanting to use carbon fiber and plastics and stuff, and those materials break down. They break down, and, you know, we studied that stuff. Our engineering team looked over that. You know, you have problems in colder weather with stuff like that. So that's why we steered away from that stuff. And people are still trying to get us to create stuff out of that, those type of materials. But I'm a little leery of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems to be the next step in really any, in the mobile game, is everybody wants carbon fiber, but I don't think people understand what carbon fiber does, just like you mentioned. So, so the sticks, they stack together tight, like similar products, or are they bulky? How's that work?
Actually, we made it a loose fit.
Okay.
And some people are always saying, like, well, why didn't you make it tight? Well, I always had a problem with the other sticks that were tight, because when you pull them apart, they'd make a noise.
Yeah.
And when you're hunting mobile, I think a big part of the game is getting really close to the deer. It's slipping in there quietly and setting up. And if you're ripping these things apart or trying to pop them apart, you're going to get clangs. You're going to get noises. So I wanted to be able to, they stack together, they go together real nice where they're not going to fall apart or anything, but they're when you take them apart, take your bungees off or you unscrew your locking mechanism, you can just lift the stick off without making noise. You just lift it off slow. Yeah. I didn't want them to stick together.
Okay. All right. Anything else interesting about the development of the stick or the current model, maybe even, you know, as you start to use it, is it perfect now, or are you always kind of like messing around and saying, okay, well, here's what I can do better. Here's what I can do better.
I think I got the stick down. I think that short stick is the best stick that's developed.
Okay.
I don't think you can really make it better than that. From my mindset, I mean, some people might prefer something like a folding step or something like that, but I think that's pretty much done, and I need to concentrate on new projects.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So we covered the stick there real quick. Now let's head and talk about the tree stand. Kind of the same question here. You know, you mentioned that you used Lone Wolf, you know, for a while. How much of that product is, you know, because it's something that you used a lot, how much of that product is in your thought process while you're developing the Beast stand?
Well, I worked with Lone Wolf for many years, since the 80s, and got me a real good background in tree stands from working with them.
Yeah.
And so it's got some, you know, some bearing on my development, for sure. I like some things about it. And, you know, when you're thinking about a Lone Wolf cast design, you know, you're thinking, well, they're casting it to reduce noise. So you don't have weld squeaks. You don't have, you know, tubing echo, all that kind of stuff. That solid design is a pretty cool concept. But, you know, you're looking at the casting as being brittle. Casting don't give at all. It just snaps. So you have to make it bulkier. Doesn't mean it's dangerous or anything. It just means that you have to make it thicker to make your ratings. So it's a little heavier than what you'd like. So, you know, looking at that, I was thinking, well, they got a patent on casting tree stands when they first came out. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to apply for a patent for machining tree stands out of extruded aluminum, which we have a current patent pending right now, which we're pretty hopeful is going to go through. We're negotiating it right now on machining platforms out of extruded plates. And it's really cutting the weight in half and having the same kind of concept of a tree stand.
Gotcha. And is this the same material that you use on the sticks? Is that on the tree stand as well?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So then the question is, I want to talk about the evolution of the tree stand too. How many prototypes did you go through and test before you came to the final destination, which is to the market today?
Probably in the neighborhood of 50.
Damn.
So we went through about 50 stands. We still have some of the original platforms, but most of them were destroyed in testing.
Yeah. So what were some of those, the things that you did the most tweaking on, you know, from, let's say, the 1.0 version?
Was beef in certain areas and lightening up other areas, trying to tweak it as light as possible. So we were real, you know, we're looking at the competition, and it's kind of aggravating because some of them don't do any testing and they just put stuff out that, you know, would never pass rating. But we took this stuff and we tweaked it so it would pass a rating from an outside firm. And I do actually in my shop, I do rating and testing and all that stuff. So it's not a big deal for me to get to that point, but we still wanted to send it out. But we made sure it was going to pass before we sent it out by doing the rating and the testing. But what we do is we do testing to see where you're going to have stress points on the stand, and you know, and we take it as light as possible. We test it and we'd feel like, okay, well, this one will hold 400 pounds in this position, but over here, you know, it'll hold 280. So we're going to beef up the 280 section and take material out of the, you know, 400 section. And we just kept tweaking models like that. And exactly where you have the, cable points and stuff like that until we had a stand that would withhold what we wanted it to hold.
Gotcha. So I noticed that the stand itself is like, what, 6.1 pounds bare? Is that it?
I think it's actually 6.7 or something like that.
I got it right here somewhere. Where is it at?
I'm not positive, but whatever's on the website is accurate.
Yeah. So we have, 6.8 pounds. And
that's an interesting point because I can tell you, I've looked at the competitions and you put it on a scale and it's nowhere as close to what they're advertising. Ours is what we're advertising.
Okay. So with that lower weight, one thing, and just, I'm looking at the spec sheet on the website here. I noticed that the weight rating is for 275 and maybe not 300 like a lot of tree stands mm-hmm. are. Does the 275 drop you out of certain certifications or anything like that?
No. It's kind of interesting how we developed that number, because we tested the stand in our facility for a rating of 300 pounds, and it surpassed a 300-pound rating. But we had some group meetings about it and stuff, and I just felt with that smaller platform that I didn't know if I really want somebody over 300 pounds in that stand.
Yeah.
But we could get that rated for 300 pounds. As a matter of fact, the rating facility kind of looked at me with a, you know, raised eyebrow and said, you know, you guys would have passed for 300. And I was like, yeah, I know. But, you know, maybe I should have rated it for 300 because everybody else is. But I really, my mindset is never to look at what everybody else is doing. I just feel like a guy 300 pounds is going to need a little more room than what's in that stand platform.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah. So it's not like you said, okay, well, I have three, you know, I have the weight rating of 300 pounds. I can shave off more material to make it rated, you know, and rate it less. It's not that, that's not the case, right?
So the case for us was I wanted to make a stand with a rating of 300 pounds, and I did that.
Yeah.
And then when we sent it for testing, we had it rated on the outside for 275. You pick a number, you tell them what you want. And we said 275.
Gotcha.
And we had already tested it to 300. I just don't want to market it to people who are going to be disappointed in it.
Yeah.
And it's a small platform, and I think a big guy isn't going to like it as much. I mean, it's an expensive purchase because of the machine that goes into it, and I want a guy to be happy when he spends that money.
Yeah. So how did you come up with the specs, right? The 20-inch seat height, the 9x11.5 seat, the 29x16 platform, all that stuff.
Well, the platform, I got into stands, tried them out, saw how it felt, and I'm a little tight in the platform, but I like that. You don't need much. Get up against a tree and blend in, you know. But the seat, we went with kind of the industry standard size, so that a guy could purchase aftermarket seats from the various companies that sell them for, I mean, it's basically the same size as a Lone Wolf seat.
Gotcha.
Just a lot lighter.
Right.
Basically.
Okay. So when it comes to the other stands on the market that are similar to the Beast stand, you know, cause people look, you know, just by looks, and people who are uneducated in the whole process of building and developing a tree stand, where are the biggest differences between what you've brought to market and what the other similar stands have on the market already?
Well, they're most similar stands are mass produced and them pouring molds or welding things and stuff like that. And we're taking a solid piece of metal and cutting that stand out of it.
Right.
We're machining everything right in Wisconsin. It's all real precision stuff. We make sure everything's really, you know, a great fit. Everything works right. They're hand built in our we've got a warehouse, and we hand put them together and test each one. So,
gotcha. So then as far as the end user is concerned, right? You know, everybody knows you for being the mobile hunter. Who is buying this tree stand? I mean, who is your end user?
It's going to be a guy who is obsessed with whitetails and he hunts mobile. I mean, you know, you see a lot of hoopla with people screaming about the price and stuff. Well, if they don't understand the price, they're not the kind of person who should buy it. Because if you're hunting out of a cheaper stand, you're probably not hunting like me. If you hunt like I do, you'd understand the value. You know, you got to be able to get into certain trees, and equipment is stopping a lot of people from getting in trees. You see it with climbers. I mean, people look searching for a straight tree. And then you get other equipment, and you see people trying to make it work in a tree that don't work. And obviously any tree stand, no matter what it is, you can find a tree that won't work. But to maximize being able to get into anywhere, I mean, most of my setups when I sneak in on a deer, I'm getting to within 100 yards of that deer. I mean, I'm hunting on public land. These deer do not move around in daylight. You got to get right up on their bedding to get a crack at them. So I got to be able to get in there quiet, and I got to be able to get into just about any tree. And I'm getting into trees that are, you know, 3.5 inches, 4 inches in diameter, that are crooked. I'm having to put them on a certain way to hide with behind the branches and stuff. You know, that's the kind of stuff you need to do what I'm doing. To hunt like I'm hunting, you need that kind of equipment. Like I said, I built it for me and the style that I hunt. And it really is a niche market. It's for mobile guys that want to go in there and creep up on bucks and set up on them. But there's also a market for it for the guy who's got a farm. He's got a bunch of set stands. You still need a mobile stand to make a move when you see something. If you're sitting on that farm and you in your permanent stand and you see a 10-pointer that you want to shoot 200 yards off, come out of a bedding area and enter a bean field or something, if you don't move over there the next day, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
So there's a mobile market for anybody who's serious about trophy hunting.
Yeah. So what do you think is the most important categories? And that's a kind of a broad statement when it comes to a broad question when it comes to mobile hunters, like noise, lightweight, I don't know, made in America, that kind of stuff. What do you think for the guys who are on the Beast Forum or the guys who you interact with on a daily basis, what are they most concerned about when it comes to their gear?
Well, it's funny because I think weight seems to be the number one topic lately, where I think really getting into any tree should be the number one topic. But we addressed every single issue that you mentioned. Yeah. But I do believe that weight is the number one thing talked about the most.
Okay. And you think that plays the biggest role in decision-making for... So what I'm getting at is everybody, you know, there's this lineup of tree stands on the market, you know, that are in some way, shape, or form similar to the functionality, let's say, is similar to the B stand. These guys are weighing weight as more important than other categories.
Yeah, I believe you're right, but I believe they're wrong.
Okay.
And the thing is, too, I could chase that. I could go out and make, you know, a 5-pound stand. But the difference between a 5-pound stand and a 6-pound stand, you're not going to feel that on your back. And I'm not going to make stuff just to sell it. You know what I mean? Like guys are like, hey, you took the bow holder out of it. Well, yeah, there's not room for it. You want me to put one there just to sell it to you?
Yeah.
And that's what some other companies are doing. You want one, we'll put it there. It ain't going to work, but we'll put it there. You know, for me, it's about functionality. In order for me, it's kind of my mental thing, you know, my mind game with myself. In order for me to build something, I have to believe in it.
Yeah.
I can't just build crap and sell it because that's what the people want. I think most people think they want something, but they really don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If they actually use the stand or tried it, they would see what I mean. But it's really about functionality and being able to get into any tree, having it be somewhat lightweight, but it doesn't have to be the absolute lightest. It just has to be, you know, quiet, light, and you can get into any tree. And it's really about the whole package.
Yeah. And in a way, you've answered this next question, right? Because a lot of people, and I've, you know, like I've read on the forums and on social and whatnot, they see the $625, you know, price and they go, holy cow, man, that is way higher than, you know, that's a higher price than the competitors, so to speak. But how do you address that? How do you tell those people that, hey man, it is worth that dollar amount, and maybe talk about the process and the materials that go into it?
Well, that's a simple equation. If you look at most of these guys that are complaining about it, they've all got a $1,000 or $1,200 bow, and they replace it every 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
What's a bow? is two cams, two limbs, and a riser. You know how the riser is made? Just like my stamp. The same process to make that aluminum riser. So basically, the process is expensive. If you think I'm getting rich off this, I'm not. Not at all, as a matter of fact. But we're making an advanced product, and I believe it's going to take off here in the future. And it's an expensive process to make this, and if you can pay that for a bowl, you can pay that for a stand if you want it. You know, and the guys who hunt like I do are going to want a product like that. The guys that that aren't going to understand are the guys that are listening going, you know, I put five stands on my property. How am I going to afford that? You know, I pay, you know, $80 a stand to put them on. You know what? I got cheap stands on our farm too. That's usually not where I kill the buck. I kill the buck because I see them out of those stands and I make an aggressive move and go over and kill them.
Right. So it's a very niche product with a specific purpose.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about what's next, right? Because here, you know, just the conversation that I've had to you, you've talked about a lot of time and energy and testing to come to the market with the sticks in the stand. What's next coming out of the Beast Gear camp?
Well, I've got some other ideas for some lightweight small stands that I can't talk too much about. Because it's a pretty much of a copycat market right now.
Yeah.
But we are working on some stuff right now that's pretty exciting.
Okay.
But it'll probably take a couple of years to develop.
Okay. What about the saddle game? I mean, everybody and their mama is you know, preaching about the saddle these days. Do you see yourself ever getting into that market?
Well, I might make a saddle platform. I think I could make a pretty cool one. But saddle hunting isn't really much, I'm not much for it.
Yeah.
I feel you really got to get close to those trees and hug them so that you're not getting spotted. I have a hard time shooting around trees and over straps and stuff and not moving around, hanging on a strap. So for me, it's each your own, but it's not really a great concept for hunting big bucks to me.
Yeah.
But that said, I do believe I could make a pretty cool platform for those guys.
Okay. So, all right.
That is on the horizon.
Gotcha. Outside of the tree, right? The outside of the sticks, outside of anything that goes on the actual tree, any interest in building like high quality accessories or things that are already on the market, but making them better or, you know, giving them the Dan Infault touch, so to speak.
Yeah, we got a couple things we're working on. But some of them are on the back burner until we get this production run rolling.
Gotcha.
But we have, camera arms and advanced seat cushions and things like that that we're working on.
Okay. All right. So, you know, one of the last questions I have for you here is, you know, a guy listens to this. He goes to your website, huntingbeastgear.com, and he checks out all your gear, and he's debating on whether he buys your sticks and stands or, you know, other tree stands on the market. What pitch are you giving them to persuade them to get your products?
Well, I mean, one thing they should do is look at reviews. I mean, everybody that's bought our sticks I very seldom see a bad review. I think I've seen one ever. That where somebody had a negative review. If you look at, you know, how people like their products, I mean, talk to people that have them.
Yeah.
That's, you know, cause I, you know, anytime I tell somebody something, they think I'm trying to sell them something.
Yeah.
You know, but the best thing you can do is talk to somebody who's unbiased, who has them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say, hey, who has them and is using them? And what do you think?
Yeah.
If you have a buddy that's got a set, try them. Because my big thing, you know, with the sticks and the stand is once it gets in a guy's hands and he tries it, it's game over. They're not buying a different brand. It's a superior product, and you'll know it when you try it.
Yeah. How many years have you been hunting, Dan?
I've been hunting my whole life. I'm 54 now. I think I started hunting when I was about nine.
Okay, so that's a lot of years of hunting. How has all of those years' experience, and I should have probably asked this at the beginning of the podcast, but how have all those years of experience in the timber led you to Beast Gear?
Oh, well, definitely it does. I mean, that's the thing you got to look at. When you're looking at a guy who's who's developing products, who has a 1,000-acre ranch and hunts out of permanent stands all the time, who's making this to develop it to sell to you, they're not going to understand the needs of a guy that goes out and does what I do. And there's a lot of guys that probably listen to your podcast that are just like me, who go out there in public land and go back in 2 miles into a swamp to hunt and have to get their gear through cattails and through brush and stuff and walk that far and have deep water and not get half dead by the time they get to their tree stand, and then they got to get back out in the dark. Guys that are developing that don't do that, they're not developing a product that can do that because they don't even know, what that's about.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any other people that develop tree stands that hunt like I do, but I do think the majority of people hunt like I do. Maybe not because they want to, but most people can't afford a lease. Most people can't afford a private farm. So a lot of guys are hunting public land, and a lot of guys choose to nowadays.
Yeah.
And this equipment is developed by a person who is not only hunted like that his whole life, but he's also in that unique position where I'm in a career where I build and develop products and have a huge expertise in development.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Dan, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on the Hunting Gear podcast here and talk about the Beast Gear, man. Looking forward to seeing what else comes out of your camp, and good luck to you, the company, and in the timber in 2021, man.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.